Yud Aleph Teves, Friday the 6th of January, Rabbi Rashi Simon, Ephraim and Menashe, Unlikely Paragons.
It's a pleasure to be here at Torah Way once again in a slightly different venue and different topic. That's the good news. No point in hearing a rerun. You can always go to Kol HaLashon to hear the reruns. So something new, hopefully, albeit a subject which is very well known and is certainly a topic that's relevant in the sense that Ephraim and Menashe are on our lips regularly. The original minhag of blessing one's children probably originates on Erev Yom Kippur. If you look in your mafsa, you see there's a longer, very beautiful nusach there, which many people say. And apparently that was the custom for a long period of time, and it's only over time that it has evolved to giving a bracha to a child every Friday night. Not everyone does, but it's a very well-known and widely observed minhag. Probably over time they realize that children need a blessing more than once a year, that once a year is not nearly enough. Of course, the subject we'd like to look at is why does the Torah tell us, or why has the minhag developed to bestow upon our sons the blessing they should be as Ephraim and Menashe? After all, Ephraim and Menashe are not that well-known personalities. The Torah does not tell us a great deal about them. But before we do that, just derech agav parenthetically, and also by way of highlighting the irony, I just want to mention that to one's daughters, the custom is to give the bracha Yisimecha Elokim Kesara Rivka Rachel V'Leah. Now, you could say that that's quite obvious, those are the matriarchs, but again, it highlights the irony, why don't we bless our sons to be as Abraham, Yitzhak, V'Yakov? And therein the disparity is, as I say, highlighted. I just want to mention that this bracha for daughters is not mentioned in the classic sources. Sarivka Rachel V'Leah is not a pasuk anywhere, and probably people realize that daughters also need a bracha, so we don't have anything specifically in the Torah, so we'll bless them as the matriarchs. It's interesting, some have suggested another pasuk, another text which is a pasuk. Some say Yisimech Elokim Kerachel Uchaleya Asher Banu Shtehen Espes Israel. That's what I was going to say. Who knows who got that bracha? Yeah, that's what it says in Sefer Rus, that she was blessed. Yisimech, I'll just say the pasuk again, Kerachel Uchaleya Asher Banu Shtehen Espes Israel. So some say that is a more appropriate bracha because that's actually a pasuk, and we find that someone was blessed with that formula. And of course, Rus did become the progenitor of a very great dynasty, as is very well known. But anyway, that's just a parenthetical. I'm too much of a traditionalist, though, so I'm afraid I say what's printed in the Sidurim. Although, as I say, the basis or the source for that is not exactly clear. But Al Kol Panim, as I said, it highlights the irony of why it is that we give to our sons the bracha Ephraim v'Ephraim Menashe. Now, the simple answer to that question, of course, is very well known. Shteken Pasuk Azoy. Yaakov himself said, B'chay Yivarech Yisrael, Lemor Yisimcha Elokim Ephraim v'Ephraim Menashe. So Yaakov told Yosef that you are going to become the paradigm for a blessing. And people will say about their sons, may they be as Ephraim and Menashe. And there's something very beautiful here, which perhaps you've already noticed. Yaakov says to Yosef, you will become the paradigm for blessing, because people will hope that their sons will be like your sons. And even though the bracha to Yosef is an indirect bracha, the bracha to Yosef is that you will have the pride and you will have the awareness that your sons are worthy of bracha and worthy of being the paradigms of bracha, and that is the greatest bracha to a father. The greatest blessing to a father is that he should have nachas from kinder, that he should have pride in his sons, and that they will grow to bring a credit to the family and, of course, to all of Klal Yisrael. So, in a way, there's something very, I find very profound and very touching, that the greatest bracha that Yaakov could give to Yosef is that your sons, Ephraim and Menashe, will be the paradigm for bracha in future generations. But all of this is only, as I say, throws into sharp relief why. What was so great about them? Why, of all of the great personalities, including Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, we don't bless our sons to be like them, but rather as Ephraim and Menashe. So there are a few approaches which have been suggested. Some are very well known. Some want to say that these are the first brothers that we know that did not quarrel with one another. Anyone who has children, more than one child, hopes that the children will get along, that they won't be riven with jealousy, with resentment, and whatever it may be. And Yaakov himself knew very well about that. Yosef himself knew certainly very well about the grief and the anguish of internecine conflict, of the breakdown of relations within the family. And if you think about it, of the brothers that the Torah tells us about earlier generations, we see a lot of conflict. Cain v'Hevel, Yishmael v'Yitzchak, Esav and Yaakov, of course Yosef and his brothers. And therefore, again, many have said this alone is a reason that Ephraim and Menashe should serve as the paradigm for bracha, because they got along with one another. Yeah. But that's again a little bit, minimalistic. Surely we can hope for even more than that, and of course we do. So I want to say, in a bit more profound way, that Ephraim and Menashe achieved something notable, something extraordinary. Or maybe you could say that Yosef achieved it with them, and that is that they were raised in a foreign environment, far from the rest of the family, in the formative, very early years of the gestation, you could say, even of Klal Yisrael, and they survived morally and spiritually. And even more so, they were raised in comfort, in wealth, among the aristocracy of Egypt. They were no doubt educated in the Eton College of its time. And with all of those influences, and with all of that comfort, and with all of that wealth and prestige, and with all of the intense environment, which is an unsympathetic environment in Jewish terms, of Mitzrayim, still they remained faithful to their heritage, faithful to their patrimony. And ultimately, they became, of course, members of the 12 Shvatim of Klal Yisrael. So every father hopes for his son, on the one hand, that he will be great in his ruchnius, but at the same time, we also hope that he might enjoy some of that comfort, dare I say, even some of that affluence that Yosef had at the time that he raised his sons as well. I heard just earlier this week there was a bris in Sasev where I daven, and actually twins, so it was a perfect opportunity, of course, to say a drasha on the Ephraim and Menashe, unmissable. And from a freshwater was Zayn said something also very a bit similar, very beautiful, that they had good lives. You know, Yaakov, Yosef, they had great vicissitudes. Yosef had the trauma, betrayal, incarceration, slavery. Yaakov had tremendous tribulations in his life. So for Yaakov and for Yaakov to say to Yosef, your sons will be the paradigm of blessing, because they were raised in comfort, they had peace, they had wealth, and they didn't suffer the displacement and the fragmentation in their lives, which so many other people, including, as we say, those two previous generations suffered. And I think this is a very astute, and again, you may say it's a bit simplistic, but if we're honest, do we not wish that if we didn't have it for ourselves, do we not wish it for our children? Especially, you know, the generation of the 20th century people, especially those a bit older than myself, who experienced or had very close contact with the greatest, most horrible trauma that one can imagine, and to hope that children and grandchildren will be spared all of that, I think at the very human level we can appreciate that very much. And again, this might easily justify why Ephraim and Menashe are the paradigms for blessing. But I'd like to go a little bit deeper, if I may, which I'm sure you're expecting me. You don't need to come here just to hear these sort of platitudes. Rashi famously says, the Pasuk says, Sikel es yadav. So, the word sikel is an interesting word, because it comes from the word seichel, which means wisdom or insight, but the word sikel also means to distort or to corrupt or to pervert. And Actually, the Targum seems to combine the two, because the Targum says, Ran Rashi quotes it, that he acted b'chachmasa. He did distort his hands. He did reverse his hands in this way, but he did it deliberately. He did it with wisdom and with insight. Of course, it's very well known, Yosef brought his sons to Yaakov for a blessing. Yaakov was nearly on his deathbed. He's got a bit more to say, as we know later on, but already Yosef was summoned because he heard his father was ailing. He came with his sons. Yaakov said, "Mi eile?" He wasn't even sure, you know, who they were, apparently, you know, al derech hapshat. And Yosef explained, and Yaakov said, "Bring them to me." And the Torah says clearly how Yosef arranged Ephraim and Menashe. He put Menashe to the right of Yaakov. He put Ephraim to the left of Yaakov, so that Yaakov could stretch out his hands and put his right hand upon the head of Menashe, kihu habachar. And the pasuk says, "Sikelus yadav." He deliberately transposed them. It's interesting. Rashi famously says like this, which is perhaps the pshat. Rabbeinu Bechaya quotes Rabbeinu Chananel saying differently. Rabbeinu Chananel says, "Sikel is hirkiv," that like we say, he reversed his hands in this manner. Rabbeinu Bechaya disputes that. He says, no. What it means is that Yaakov told Yosef to reverse the position of the boys, and that actually Yaakov put his right hand on the head of Ephraim in the normal fashion. But that's a chidush. Most of the Mefarshim understand it kipshuto, that Yaakov did distort his hands, which of course raises the question, why? Why didn't Yaakov simply say to Yosef, "Please ask the lads to reverse their position, because it's my intention, yadati bini yadati, that it's my intention to give the greater bracha to Ephraim." Why did he reverse his hands in that way? And for that matter, of course, we have the question, why does the pasuk say sikelas yadav ki menashe habachar? So at the simple level, ki menashe habachar, he reversed his hands, he does not mean because, but here it means afalpi, even though Menashe is the bachar. Nevertheless, Yaakov, for some particular reason, chose to put his right hand upon the head of Ephraim. But the Netziv asks, it's a miyutar to say kihu ki Menashe habachar. We well know that Menashe is the bachar. The Torah describes it very clearly. Earlier, we know that Menashe was born first, Ephraim was born second. So what does the Torah add by saying ki Menashe habachar? Netziv says something very keen, a very keen insight, I think. Not that he needs my approbation, but I think it's relevant. It's relevant for me, maybe relevant for others. I hope it is relevant for others as well. Netziv says that the Torah here is hinting to the fact that ki Menashe habachar, that Menashe will remain the bachar in a certain sense. Ephraim gets the superior bracha. Ephraim has achieved greatness and will achieve greatness even beyond what Menashe has achieved. But in a certain sense, Menashe remains superior to Ephraim. Menashe remains a superior to Ephraim. And the Netziv says that this explains also why it is that Yaakov crossed his hands, because he wanted to give the superior bracha to Ephraim, that's true. But at the same time, he wanted Menashe to retain his superior position to the right of Yaakov. That is to say, in a certain sense, which we'll explain in one moment, Menashe remains the Bechor, and his superiority over Ephraim is not compromised. Hagam, that in an even greater sense, Ephraim will ascend above Menashe. So what are the two ways? So Netziv says that the two of them excel in different areas. When it comes to Ruchnius matters, Ephraim was superior. When it comes to Halichos Olam, what we would call political leadership, or what we might say success in the world at large, Menashe was greater. The leadership of Menashe was greater than that of Ephraim when it comes to what he calls Halichos Olam. So Ephraim excelled in matters of Torah and Ruchnius. Menashe excelled in matters of terrestrial affairs. And therefore, each one was a leader, and each was superior to the other in a certain way. And he explains that this is why we find that in the census, at the beginning of Bamidbar, Ephraim is mentioned before Menashe. But at the census in Parshas Pinchas, at the end of Bamidbar, Menashe is mentioned before Ephraim. And he says that the difference is, he says it by the way here, and also in the Hakdama to Sefer Bamidbar, he elaborates on the same thing again. He says the reason is that when they left Mitzrayim, initially they were on a very high madrega, or let's say, maybe not immediately, but after Matan Torah, let's say they're on a very lofty madrega. They were at the top of the world. They were going to enter Eretz Yisrael, and it was going to be a supernatural existence, and everything was fantastic. And at that time, Ephraim is mentioned before Menashe. At the end of Bamidbar, a lot has happened since then. The Chet HaEgel, the Chet HaMeraglim. Okay, Bamidbar was probably after Chet HaEgel as well. But nevertheless, it was the Chet HaMeraglim, and they wandered around for 40 years. By the time they entered Eretz Yisrael, so the level of Klal Yisrael had fallen from what it was. They conquered Eretz Yisrael. Okay, they had divine assistance, no doubt. No doubt, but they had to go to war. They had some difficult times along the way. It was a much more of Derech HaTeva experience by the time they entered Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, at the census, at the end of Bamidbar, Menashe is mentioned first. He even points out that the Lashon is slightly different. He said that... He points out how, from the Lashon here, Mashenkim b'menashik si va'alav matem menashe, that it's instead of just saying v'hachonim alav, it says va'alav matem menashe. He's hinting that the Torah acknowledges the superiority of Menashe, not necessarily over Ephraim, but the fact that Menashe was a leader. And therefore, he explains that Sikeles Yadav, because he wanted Menashe to retain his superior position in a certain sense. So ultimately, he put Ephraim before Menashe, because greatness in the area of Ruchnius is more important than greatness in the area of Halichos Olam. Nevertheless, the achievement of Menashe and the importance of Menashe has its place, and again, relatively speaking, the leadership of Ephraim, the time in which Ephraim was superior, was quite limited. By the time they entered Eretz Yisrael, and presumably in the generations following, Menashe's talent was came to the fore, and his ability and his leadership in Halichos Olam was very prominent. So with this, I think we can understand a bit better why Ephraim and Menashe represent the paradigms for a bracha, because each one excels in a particular area. But later on, the Nitziv develops this a little bit further, because he explains. He says, "Be'emes haya od zera bruchei Hashem b'nichtei Yaakov, k'mo Peretz v'zerach v'od harbe." There were other descendants of Yaakov, other among his progeny, who were also bruchei Hashem, who also had great blessing and great accomplishment. And why are Ephraim and Menashe singled out? Therefore, the question, of course, that we're discussing generally in our analysis this morning. So he says, "Aval Ephraim and Menashe." Each one excelled in a different area, as he explained. Ephraim haya gadol b'Torah v'davak b'elokav. Ephraim was the great Torah personality, and he had great spiritual achievements. Menashe b'halichos olam v'osik b'tzarchei Yisrael. Menashe was osik, as we would say, b'tzarchei tzibur. And he has a footnote then, and he quotes the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. And there you have the following. Uvarchinen b'yom ha'hu l'meima, Yaakov blessed his sons on that day, or his grandsons rather, on that day, to say, B'cha Yosef b'ri yivarchun beis Yisrael, yas yinuka b'yom ha'demuhulta. That in future generations, people will bless an infant at the day of the bris, in the following way, Lemema Yishavni Yishavina Hashem Kefraim Vichemenashe. So he asks, the Nitziv asks, why is this bracha specifically at a bris? Why is it specifically at the time of a bris, that the Targum says this is when you give that bracha. I mean, it's a nice time for a bracha, but there are other opportunities as well. What about a bar mitzvah? Or there are other opportunities. So he explains that it's only appropriate to give a person a bracha in an area in which that person has either aptitude or experience or enterprise. If someone is a lawyer, a solicitor, or a barrister, so you can wish him success in his the cases that he tries, or the clients who come to him. But if somebody is a doctor, there's no point in wishing him success with his legal practice. And similarly, if someone is studying in yeshiva, so you can wish him success in his Torah studies. But if a person is pursuing a different line of activity, then it's almost inappropriate to wish him success in an area in which he has no enterprise, in which he has no aptitude. So he says that at the time of a bris, of course, it's all potential. The infant is only a newborn, and we do not know whether he will succeed or direct his talents, or whether he'll be endowed with talents that will enable him to achieve greatness in Torah, or perhaps not. Perhaps his aptitude and his interest and his derech ha-chaim will be in a different direction. So he says, therefore, b'yom ha-demehulta, we say, k'efrayim v'chem menashe. Either way, either paradigm, either exemplar of success, if you follow the path of Ephraim, may you succeed as Ephraim succeeded in matters of Ruchnis. And if you take the path of Menashe, then may you succeed in the way that Menashe succeeded as well. So we have here the recognition that a person can, and to a certain degree, does pursue a different path in life. Not everyone pursues the same path. And Ephraim and Menashe therefore represent, between the two of them, in shorthand, the two main areas of human endeavor and human activity. But of course, there's something further here as well. And this is how the Netziv explains why Yaakov crossed his hands, for the reason we've explained, because each one, in a certain sense, will be the Bechor, even though the status of Bechor, of Ephraim, is the superior status. But I heard in the name of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha, lived in Chicago for many years, and he said the following, which I found very beautiful as well. Sikeles Yadav, he crossed his hands, because yes, Ephraim and Menashe each excelled in his own realm. But Yaakov wanted to hint that there should be some cross-fertilization, for those who remember their plant biology. There should be some respect in which each one shares some of the success of the other. That Ephraim and Menashe should not operate and succeed in two distinct realms, and each one has no experience or aptitude or appreciation for the enterprise of the other. But on the contrary, each one excels in his own area, but each one should also have a hand in the activity of the other. Not just cooperate, but that they should, each one should receive some of the blessing of the other. That Ephraim, who succeeds in Torah, should also have some facility, some capacity, some aptitude in Halichos Olam. And Menashe, who is the great, the Osek B'Tzarchei Tzibur, the political leader of the nation, should also have an appreciation for Torah, should also have some aptitude and understanding. So, although we have the description of the Netziv of the differences between the two, but we also have the hint that they should have some commonality as well between them. The question, therefore, I think, which the Netziv does not tell us, and which is worth considering, is why is it that Ephraim, who after all was the second born, was not the Bechor, why did he succeed in Torah more than Menashe? And why did Yaakov recognize that and choose to give him and bestow upon him the superior bracha to Menashe? And here I saw a Dvar Chidush, I think, in the writings of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zichron Levracha, and Emes Chayakov. He says something which you might even say it's controversial. I know they're controversy averse here at the Torah Way, but because this comes in Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, so hope I can get away with it. He says as follows. We know about the birth of Ephraim and Asher. We don't know a great deal about them as people. The Torah doesn't really tell us. It's mostly by inference, as we're discussing this morning. But the Torah does tell us who was born first, and the Torah tells us how they got their names. Yosef bestowed the name Menashe on his firstborn. Ki Nashani Elokim Eskol Amali Veskol Beis Avi. Nashani is not such a common word. It means to forget. He said, Hashem has enabled me or has caused me to forget all my hardship in my father's household. That's the name he gave to Menashe. Ephraim, he said, I'm naming him Ephraim. What's the lashon? Ki Ephraim Elokim Beretz Ani. Because Hashem has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. Menashe, according to Chazal, Menashe knew Lashon HaKodesh. Ki Amelis Bein Osam, that was Menashe. Menashe was a translator. Of course, Yosef also knew, but when he was playing the guise of the Egyptian viceroy, so Menashe was his translator. Menashe knew Lashon HaKodesh because Menashe was born at a time when Yaakov was closer to his homeland, closer to his family. No, Menashe was born when he was closer to the homeland closer to Yosef's homeland, and Yosef was not that comfortable yet in Mitzrayim. He says that, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says that, Hashem has enabled me to forget. In other words, I've overcome the negative, the travail and the suffering that I've endured, the trauma. Hashem has enabled me to forget it. I've overcome it. It's what he calls shekalsa hashalila. The negativity has been overcome. That's Menashe. Ephraim, by the time Ephraim was born, Yosef was feeling a lot more at home in Mitzrayim. By that time, he was already settled into his role as the viceroy, and Yosef was, Yosef was feeling more at home in Mitzrayim, and therefore, he gave the name Ephraim, Ki Ephraini Elokim, I've become fruitful. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says, in the case of Menashe, he said, I've overcome the negative. In the case of Ephraim, he said, Hashem has made me fruitful. But he says something further, which I think is very interesting. He says the name Ephraim is an Egyptian name. And he says it's interesting, all the Egyptian names that the Torah tells us, they all have the letters Pei, Ayin, and Resh, which are the main letters in the name Pharaoh. So Pharaoh has those letters, and the other names we know about, Potiphar, Potiphera, Paaneach, Tzaphnas Paaneach, Shifra, Puah. These are Egyptian names, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and they all have those letters. Ephraim was an Egyptian name. Yosef was feeling a lot more at home. I don't want to use the word, but you could say that he was feeling a lot more assimilated at that time. And he gave his son Ephraim an Egyptian name accordingly. Of course, this only highlights the irony. How is it, therefore, that Ephraim achieved greater achievement, greater ascendancy in Torah more so than Menashe? Is this not a great irony? And I would say that it may be an irony, but it's not something which is so rare. When the circumstances demand more effort, and a person expends more effort, he can achieve much more than another person, or maybe even than he himself, in a circumstance of greater comfort, of greater convenience. Some of you may know I work in the Kiruv field, and I had a Talmud years ago, a close Talmud. When I first met him, he had long hair about halfway down his back. He worked in an Afghani store, in a shop in the East London. And 3 years later, he was learning in Gates of Yeshiva. Today, he's a Rebbe in one of the local mostos. It amazes me. And he's not blessed with extraordinary intellectual skills. He's not blessed with exceptional brilliance. But somehow he was able to overcome in 3 years. Halavai, my boy, of a similar age, in 3 years should achieve as much, should transform himself, Latova, in the same way that this young fellow did. Another friend of mine, when I was in Kola, I learned Baruch Tzvi Kushelevsky years ago. There's another friend, I'm still a very, very good friend of his. He's actually very well known, although he has written publicly about this. I don't want to mention his name. I'll let him tell his story as he does from time to time. He's a very well known writer. Some of you may know who I'm referring to. He walked into yeshiva for the first time at the age of 30 in Or Sameach. 5 years later, when I got to know him, he was a younger man. He was learning at Ritziku Shulevsky's Kollel. I was there as well. He was the top boy in the shir. He was the top younger man. I remember one time Ritzvi asked a kasha, very difficult kasha. It was a shir kholi. The base manager was full of 200 people, some of them quite talented. I don't count myself among the talented ones. He said, does anybody know? Who's got the teretz? This fellow raised his hand, and I remember turning to a friend of mine, I said, you know, hey, how is it? You know, he was in university until a few years ago, a very bright guy, but how can it be? Okay, no doubt, talent and hard work, but it's partly this phenomenon exactly. The fact that Ephraim was born when Yosef was more at home in Mitzrayim, and he gave an Egyptian name even. That's why maybe Yosef invested more effort in Ephraim, and maybe that is why Ephraim achieved his greatness and his superiority in Torah over that of Menashe. And Yaakov recognized it, and Yaakov therefore stretched forth his right hand and put it on the head of Ephraim. I know our time is just about up. I'd like to end with one last reason, which the Torah says, Yaakov says that Ephraim and Menashe ke Reuven v'Shimon yihiyu li. They say, you know, I think of the Sfas Emes. Those more knowledgeable Sfas Emes than I can tell me if it is so. That again, this maybe is the greatest bracha of all. That Yaakov says to Yosef, Ephraim and Menashe ke Reuven v'Shimon yihiyu li. They are my grandsons, but I will regard them as my own sons. Each of my sons will father a tribe. You, Yosef, will father two tribes. Each of your sons will themselves be the head of a shevet. In other words, to put it in language of the 1960s, there will be no generation gap. I'm a child of the 60s and 70s, and when I was young, there was a lot of talk about the generation gap, how parents don't understand children, and children can't relate to their parents. You may remember the signs, don't trust anyone over 30, or whatever it might be. And this is the much ballyhooed generation gap. Says Yaakov, B'chayiv arech Yisrael, the great bracha will be that there will be no generation gap. That Ephraim and Menashe, Reuven v'Shimon yihiyuli. With your permission, I'd like to just end with a story. I've got another friend who's a Rav in America. His name is Yisrael Gettinger, and he's been a Rav in the Midwest for many years. His father, I think, is still living. Zangezunt is a Rav, probably emeritus now, of the young Israel of the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And you may know him, actually. I think you're sure, probably. Yeah, so Yisrael Gettinger, was my contemporary, a bit older than me. His grandfather was a man called Naftali Reif. He was a big Talmud Chacham. He was a Litvish Ilui. He came to America in the 1920s. Actually, in 1920, he came to America and became the Rav in Camden, New Jersey. He was a Rav there for almost 50 years in Camden, New Jersey. And he said, when I came, my beard was black and the neighborhood was white. He said, now it's the Hefech. Yisrael Gettinger was once in his grandfather's shul in Camden, New Jersey, and he heard one of the Balabatim, speaking to his son. And the father was possibly maybe European born, or maybe was just born in the early years of when his parents came to America. And the son was completely Americanized, a blue-blooded American boy, you know, with long hair, and he was completely Americanized. And he overheard the father say to the son like this. He said, "You know what? I'm not that religious. Oh, it's true. I go to shul every Shabbos. I eat only kosher food. I put on tefillin every day. But I want you to know that my father, your grandfather." So he was strictly Shomer Shabbos, and he went to shul three times a day. He used to learn Gemara every day. But my grandfather, he was a shopkeeper, but he only kept his shop open the minimum amount of time. He was learning every spare moment, and he was known for his piety and his scholarship. That was my grandfather. He said, but my great-grandfather, your great-great-grandfather, he said to his son, he was a renowned Talmud Chacham, he was a Rav, and he authored important Svarim with erudite Talmudic commentaries. And the man said to his son, you know what, I don't expect you to be the same as me, but what troubles me is, how is it that you've made me into a great-great-grandfather in one generation? This is the downfall. This has been the experience of the Jewish people in the 20th century in the Western world. Said Yaakov to Yosef, Ephraim and Menashe can Reuven with Shimon Yilid, there'll be no generation gap. And those who can achieve that, those parents who are Zocha, that their children are able to achieve the greatness, maybe of earlier generations, to close the gap, Ashrei him v'Ashreinu. Ashrei.